You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome in, welcome in. This is South Carolina's premium live YouTube show in South Carolina's On The Beat podcast. Ross Martin, John Bowman, waiting on Adam Smith again. Adam, if you're listening, set your clock back an hour. You'll be on time. How are y'all?
Doing well. Ross, how's the juice cleanse treating you?
Day 4, juice 6.
Wow. What flavor? Johnny T-shirt's our sponsor. And all that stuff. What flavor juice are we on now, Ross? I heard you talking about one when you did the scoop with Don.
This is a orange, lemon, carrot, ginger juice. I just finished a collard green cucumber pineapple one too.
So we're down how much?
Weight lost about nine pounds. But wow. I think I'm gonna gain it back tomorrow or the next day. One more day.
And probably down about $150 for all that premium juice that you're buying, I'm sure.
Yeah. Hey, pay now or pay later.
Absolutely. Adam Smith. A new face, at least in the last couple of weeks. What's happening, my man?
We're doing this on Thursdays now. Is that right?
Thursdays at 9 p.m. So your clock right now should read 8:05.
I was on here Tuesday night, but nobody showed up. I don't know what happened.
That's great. Is that an old school Colonial Athletic Association shirt?
It is. It is. Big CAA matchup last night between College of Charleston and UNCW.
I assume College of Charleston won that.
It was a tight one down at Trask Coliseum in Wilmington. They did.
My son just got an acceptance letter to UNCW. Probably won't be his choice, but we'll see what comes in later. All right, let's get right into it. On The Beat, we got close to 100 folks in here. A lot to talk about tonight. We'll start with Dre Bly's exit. Somebody in the chat said, football or basketball talk first. We're starting with football because we're going to have a special guest here in a minute. But Ross, I guess, not surprised, but maybe so. I don't know. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's relatively surprising, I would say. I would think of, you know, if you read the message boards, the two coaches they kind of want fired based on results would be Tim Cross and Dre Bly, just based on how their units have performed over the last four seasons, especially the last season. Defense has gotten worse in those areas, especially with the talent influx at defensive line and at cornerback. I mean, he had some talented corners with Grimes and Duck. And is my audio okay, John?
Yeah.
Is it good?
AirPod audio, for sure.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, Mac Brown said he'd meet up with Gene Chizik and make a decision on some coaches, and it sounds like the first move was to part ways with Dre Bly. It sounds like Dre Bly is going to pursue coaching opportunities elsewhere. It does seem like, you know, mutual parting, but it does seem like it was one-sided. I'm sure Dre would love to stay at UNC, but I think it's a necessary move if to get better at that position. Because I think he was really good recruiter based on the talent he brought in from the 757 for a couple of years. But once that talent's not developed at cornerback, you kind of lose. They can easily recruit against you. I think that was one factor to think about. You know, when I think Tony Grimes is kind of the guy you look at coming in as a five-star, not really getting better, almost getting worse over the 3 years, and then transferring. And that's kind of the worst case scenario there. So part ties with Dre Bly. We should see if there's anything else that happens. We don't know. I don't know if there's any more moves made, and interesting to see where Mack Brown goes. Do they move Charlton Warren to coaching both defensive backs, safeties and corners, and then bring in someone to coach maybe Jax and rush end and defensive ends, and then keep Tim Cross the defensive line? Or how do you handle the coaching group now? I'm sure Gene Chizik and Charleston Warren will have a say in that moving forward. But, yeah, Dre Bly, one of the best cornerbacks, one of the best defenders in UNC history, essentially fired yesterday. So that is shocking, man. I thought, you know, for his recruiting prowess, you think you could keep him on. But he's gone.
Yeah, definitely in some sort of role. I guess the option to coach cornerbacks was not a thing anymore for Dre Bly. So he moves on. Where it lands up, I'm sure we will keep up with it, find out, and hopefully he's successful. Adam, what'd you think? I mean, you had to ask the question on Monday, and Mac answered it and told you he was in no rush. And here we are,
right?
48 hours later.
2 days later. He gave us what he said. He said, he basically said, so give me 2 weeks. I mean, he said the words 2 weeks, and then, yeah, 2 days later, Dre Bly, they have mutually agreed. How does a mutual agreement of parting ways work? Does that ever happen in the real world? I don't know.
It's like a breakup. It's always one-sided, right? It can be as mutual as you want, but it's always one side.
It's always someone's decision. But yeah, I agree. I echo Ross in that. Obviously, the development at that position was an issue, but for whatever reason, I felt like that Mac's connection to Dre as, you know, a player in Mac 1.0, one of the greatest defensive players in school history, and Dre's recruiting prowess, I felt like that just sort of in Mac's mind would outweigh the pluses there would outweigh the negatives in Mac's mind. That's how I always looked at it, but it didn't. You know, they made the move, and like Tommy alluded to, we had heard that that Dre was offered I don't know if offered's the right word, told that you can move to a different position in the staff for the same amount of pay, and did not do that. So yeah, Dre Bly's out, and they need to hire another coach. You could hire someone to coach the Jacks. You know, you should hire somebody to coach the defensive ends if you wanted to make Charlton Warren just, you know, the overseer of the entire secondary. A lot of different ways you could go. Will Tim Cross be next? I do not know, but obviously that the conventional wisdom was that the pass rush has been sort of punchless the last couple of years, and that the play in the secondary has been lacking. So I
think another point is all his corners transferred, you know, like that's kind of like jarring. Like why you have Tamir Brown, Storm Duck, Tony Grimes, and Dante Balfour all transferring for, you know, that's gotta be what, at least half of your position room.
Dontavious Nash. Is he a corner? Or is he a
safety? He's a safety. So four corners transferring, which is a little jarring and hard to, you know, not notice. Like, why are these guys transferring? Like a guy like Dante Balfour, you know, just a sophomore, redshirt freshman, you know, he could have probably stayed and played eventually, but so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I think too, it's worth mentioning as well, Storm Duck and Tony Grimes were on NFL draft radars ahead of last season and ahead of this past season. And you know, there's a reason why both of those guys are transferring to other programs rather than declaring for the NFL draft. I think that's another piece of this conversation is, you know, taking someone like Storm Duck or Tony Grimes, who maybe was a day three NFL prospect in the eyes of some guys like Mel Kiper and some of the experts out there. And instead of sort of developing and turning into a day two NFL guy, those guys are now on to other teams to maybe rehabilitate their NFL profiles. So I think that's another piece of it. And one final point I wanted to make too about Bly, it's worth mentioning. So in the 2022 class, UNC signed 5 of the top 8 players from the state of Virginia. That's only 1 year ago. So, you know, Bly was a prolific recruiter. We all know, too, he had a very close relationship with Josh Downs.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh Downs was a sensational player for UNC for 3 straight seasons. So I think it's a little bit of a bittersweet moment. I think Mac, always a consummate professional, he handled it in sort of a way only he could by trying to make it the wording as gentle as he could make it.
Josh Downs said, I can remember Ross and I, you know, the group of us that, you know, covered the team regularly, talking to Josh Downs and asking him just about his path, you know, to becoming a 2-time first team All-ACC receiver, these 1,000-yard seasons. And he said he could remember when Mac got the job because he said, my uncle, meaning Dre, called me up when Mac got the job and said, hey, I'm going to Chapel Hill. You got to come with me. And that always stuck out to me that, you know, he thought about it all the way back to when, you know, he said he was 150 pounds. Now, Dre's coaching the cornerbacks. You know, he's not coaching the receivers, but, you know, he got one of the best receivers in school history in there too. And I've got to think his relationship with, like, the Drake Mays of the world didn't hurt, you know, with his ties to Charlotte and things like that.
Yeah.
There you go. When I wrote the article, Bly had a role in recruiting all those players you see on your screen. Sam Howell, Josh Downs, Tony Grimes, Cedric Gray, Drake May, Keyshawn Silver, 5-star, Zach Rice, 5-star, George Pettaway, Taiwan Holloway, Tyshawn Chapman, Marcus Allen. So some of the most talented players of the last 4 years. Bly was a very active recruiter. I was speaking with a staff member, and he told me that Bly would help out with any recruitment, regardless of position, side of the ball. He would help out with any position, and he was very willing and active as a recruiter. And look, young, African-American, I mean, I don't know, they're very helpful. I mean, that's a good person to have to talk with, a young Black people who are going to play for your school. So, and he was energetic, vibrant. You know, he would come talk to me and Adam after press conferences for like 20 minutes, give us all this, you know, kind of go back and forth with us. So we had a relationship with him as well. So,
and he loved Carolina, Ross. Yeah. Add that to the list too.
He played the NFL. I mean, he won a Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, there are all these boxes that he checked as far as a recruiter. Now, you know, you take it over to the development side, but I totally agree with Ross. I mean, the energy that Dre Bly had was infectious energy, I thought. You know, like, you couldn't help but sort of smile and get happy when Dre Bly came around. And you heard him coming, too. You could always hear him coming.
Tommy, bring a special guest.
Speaking of hearing him come, you know, this is the biggest guest possibly in this show's history. I want to give a shout-out. Let's bring him on.
Is he in?
How you guys doing?
Look at this.
This is when duty calls. I come in, you know.
Look, so let me
put out the bat signal.
Let me make a point while Don's in here, and Ross, and then I'll let you introduce Don fully. But what's interesting to me about this is the analysts can coach now. Analysts and all that can coach on the field and do all that. The NCAA has changed that rule, so that's why I was a little surprised that Dre wants to stay in the coaching aspect of it. Well, he could have done that in a different role, whereas you couldn't do that before now. Anyway, it's an interesting departure, I would say, but not unexpected. Go ahead, Ross.
Live from Planet Fitness, we have Inside Carolina Football Recruiting
Guru. Probably shouldn't give them free advertisement, should I?
What a power move.
We decided to bring Don on for a recruiting kind of, you know, Don's been covering recruiting and Dre Bly now for 4 years. And so we thought we'd bring him on for a little bit about how this affects UNC's recruiting, what Dre Bly did for UNC, and then how this changes how UNC will recruit now, given the loss of Bly from a recruiting standpoint. We'll give Don the floor here, pop a couple questions out here, and get them out of here before we go into some basketball talk. Don, the floor is yours. Dre Bly, recruiting. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I only focus on recruiting, so that's really from a impact standpoint. That's all I care about, and I think it's a big loss for North Carolina. To be honest, I think, you know, he was one of UNC's better recruiters, and he was a green recruiter for sure. I mean, he has only been a a college coach for a few years, you know, just when he was at North Carolina. So he kind of learned on the job, and he made a couple of mistakes early on and was still making some mistakes, but he had a lot of success in a short period of time, despite his lack of, experience. You know, for a lot of things Ross said, he was able to resonate with a lot of recruits, particularly in that 757 area. I mean, you can have an ace recruiter in Charlotte, for example, and you can always replace them with another really good recruiter, bring them into the Charlotte area, and have some success. With Bly and the Tidewater area, I just can't imagine anyone who could do a better job in that area. And it's difficult to fully explain just what sort of cachet he kind of carries in that area, unless you've been in that area, you've been around those, the camps and the different events that they hold in that area. I mean, he's idolized. You know, there's fields in that area named Dre Bly Field. And, a lot of those people who grew up in that football community stayed in that community, and their sons went on. You know, Daylon Everett, who UNC didn't get, but UNC, fought tooth and nail against Clemson for, his dad played against Dre Bly when they were in high school. There's a lot of other situations like that where recruits, parents knew him growing up. His Dre Bly's sister is a teacher in the area. His mom has lived in the same house forever. I think it's a big loss from a recruiting standpoint for sure. And, it's going to be tough to replace. I don't see how North Carolina can have similar success in the 757 with Dre Bly leaving.
And I'll get in here and ask you this question. It seems like there's been a sort of a shift a little bit off of Virginia, especially the 757 with Charlton Warren involved. They've gone to Georgia and gotten some guys. Is that sort of a thing, or is that just how it's worked out this last couple of cycles?
Well, recruiting is cyclical, So, I mean, you're kind of using this past year. Well, the year prior, most of UNC, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I mean, I think it was like almost half, if not half, of the class was Virginia guys. And the year before that, UNC got a bunch of other Virginia guys in the, what would they be, the 2021? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, 2021 class. And still, even though that there was more of a focus, Charlton Warren has stronger ties to that Atlanta area and naturally likes those Georgia boys. But UNC still did get Paul Billups out of the 757 and was recruiting a bunch of other players in future classes in that area.
Adam Smith, you're up. Question for legendary Don Callahan.
I'll throw one up. I love everything about this, Don. I really do. I was scrolling through some of the comments here as you talked, and I thought, let's see, who was it that had? I'm not smart enough to put them up on the screen, but there we go. Question from Slagle, I thought was a good one. He asked, was the lack of development in the secondary hurting Carolina on the recruiting trail? Is that something that players or parents or high school coaches, do you think they noticed that? Do you think they picked up on that with maybe, Tony Grimes becoming a flop? I don't know if flop's too strong of a word, but is that something that you think recruits notice?
So I think typically recruits don't notice those things, but I think, as you mentioned, using the Tony Grimes example, that is the Tony Grimes signing, I think we're going to look back on and see it was kind of like a double-edged sword in a way, because, it did help UNC sign a lot of guys from that area, including obviously Tony Grimes. But the fact that things ended with him transferring, and for the reasons I've heard through the grapevine on why they felt the need to transfer, that's not going to help North Carolina. And some of it was the developmental stuff. So I think, yes, to answer your question, in this scenario, yes, I think it wasn't going to help North Carolina with certain guys. But in general, high school recruits just aren't that detailed oriented to really look into those sort of things.
Hey, that's a great point there. Let me ask you a question, Don, from Drew Krebs, and I'll pull it up on the board. Real question to the show. Is a great high school recruiter a premier quality in a coach given the portal situation? I sort of asked Mac that off to the side a little bit. How do you balance high school recruiting and portal recruiting? So how important is it to have a great high school recruiter on your staff, Don?
Yeah. So your question is how great is it to have the high school recruiter? Your question is different than this question.
Okay. Well, let's stick with his question since it's more clear.
Okay. Okay.
With transfers being such a big role now, how important is it to have a high school recruiter?
Yeah. Does it diminish it? I guess is what the question is.
Yeah. Yeah. That.
Yeah. I mean, all right. I think that still remains to be seen. You know, yes, the transfer portal has been around for a couple of cycles, but this is the first one where we got like it full on. And I don't know. I still think that programs, good programs, the core of them, the foundation is going to be built on high school recruiting. And you look back at, you know, Georgia, for example. I mean, they have a dynasty built, and it's because of what they have done in high school recruiting. You look at where their ranking has been, you know, and do they do well? Does Alabama do well in the transfer portal? Sure, but they're plugging holes. They're not building the program from that. Georgia wouldn't be, you know, favored to three-peat again if they just purely went through the transfer portal because all those guys would be gone. So I still think that having good high school recruiters on staff is really important.
All right, boys. Don, I have an important question. How much do you bench?
I bench the bar.
Don't tear your pack. I got one question to get us out of here to kind of put the, you know, put the end of this Dre Bly era. Like, what made him, you know, what is his legacy, I guess, as a UNC coach for 4 years? What made him such a good recruiter? What will you remember about Dre Bly's time as a coach at UNC?
You know, I think you summed it up really well. I only caught the tail end of what you were saying. Was just, you know, he's such an interesting guy because, yes, he's cocky. And when you say that, you, at least in my mind, it's like a negative connotation, but it's almost like a fun cocky. Like, no one ever takes offense to it. He's definitely very sure of himself. It's almost like the best example is like a Chad Ochocinco sort of thing. You know, that level of cockiness. Very, very likable. You never feel like he's talking down to you, which you can definitely get with college coaches in a lot of instances. You never feel like you're talking to a guy who played in the Super Bowl, who was at one point one of the best cornerbacks in the league ever. Just so incredibly down to earth. Now, yes, he will remind you certain things about his career when you're talking to him, but always had a smile on his face, always loved UNC, definitely bled Carolina blue. You know, I think he did some really good things for North Carolina on the recruiting trail.
That is the expert, Don Callahan, live from a gym. We're not going to give free advertisements out here. But if you all have a dollar, if you have a dollar, you can join.
That's got to be a first time, a Planet Fitness podcast appearance.
It's all
maybe next time I'll be on the treadmill and do it.
Right, you go ahead. I've got an elliptical in my garage. If you want to buy it and put it in the man tower, I'll help you get it there. That's Don Callahan. Appreciate it, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Get back to your workout.
I'll see you guys later.
Very, very interesting take there, or at least an interesting area of take there. But he's right. The loss of Dre Bly will be felt by North Carolina, but I think the relevance here, and there's discussion in the chat, is that player development was an issue. Was it Dre Bly's issue? We'll find out because he is no longer on staff at North Carolina. I'm going to take a short break. Anything left football-wise, guys, before I move on?
That's an all-timer. That's an all-timer joining Planet Fitness. Yeah. I can't let that go. That's awesome.
John, speechless. Is there anything transfer-related you want to get into after the press conference? Do you think worth talking about?
Well, somebody asked, were they going to get any more out of the portal? I think I talked to Jason Staples a fair amount today and working on some things with him. I think they still need a couple more pieces in the portal. I don't know if they're going to get in any more now. I think after May, or whenever it opens, May 1st to the 15th, I think they're going to lose some more. They could very well have some more announcements before January 18th. Like Olsen gets in the portal right after classes go in session, gets your education paid for. That's how you do it. So I think there's a significant likelihood. Don't you agree, Ross, that they lose more and then subsequently need to pick up more? As we've seen, going into a season like Carolina has, down scholarships is just a way to get behind the eight ball if injuries hit.
What positions do you think they need to add from Tommy? It seems like you have a couple ideas.
Yeah, I think they need another wide receiver. Jason and I talked, and for folks that pay attention to what Jason does, he's dropping, first one will drop tomorrow, film breakdown of Nate McCollum, and then we discussed in a YouTube, about 10, 15-minute YouTube off of that, his impact and all. With McCollum comes Tez Walker from Kent State. So that's two guys. They replace the two that left, Josh Downs and Antoine Green. And with them, with along with Pesor and J.J. Jones and the other guys, you've got seven solid players there, and they like to carry eight. And if you look at the roster, I was looking at the Go Heels roster, and there's like 15 or 20 wide receivers, but only six or seven of them are scholarship guys. So I think they'll add one there. And, Ross, you know, I don't think you can have too many linemen, you know.
Yeah, I think they would look to add a left tackle just as an insurance, given the loss of Austin Richards. You know, I think Travion Green could be the starter at left tackle, but you need a backup. So maybe get a grad transfer in there. And I think they probably could need another corner too, numbers-wise. They lost four. They bring in two in the portal. But, you know, the freshmen aren't ready. So it's a different world. I think a big thing to take away from the Mac press conference was that Mac is evolving. I wrote about this, evolving. We talked about this in the Scoop podcast on Wednesday. Mac's evolving to a point where you need players in the transfer portal to build depth for special teams. You get someone who can try to compete for a star position, but you just need numbers now because you're losing 10. You got to replace 10. And he said, like, you know, why get a freshman? We can go out and get a three-year player. He said it sucks because you're not taking as many high school players. But why would someone go try to develop a 18-year-old safety when you have a four-year, 22-year-old safety who can ready and be an impact from day one? So
that's exactly what I was going to say, Rawls. Sorry to cut you off, Tommy.
No, you go ahead.
Was that – when you talk about takeaways, one of my things in just listening to Mac and trying to hear what he's saying but also what he's implying is when he says, you know, he sort of gets philosophical and – you know, old timey in a way of saying, you know, I hope this just doesn't kill high school recruiting. I hope this doesn't change high school recruiting. I think he's saying that because he feels it happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think he says that because that's what's happening. Because just like Raul said, you could go get yourself a proven player on whatever level. Maybe he's proven on the FCS level, like the corner from ETSU, or the group of five level, like Walker from Kent State. But you can get someone who is proven on the college level as opposed to a total wild card who's 18 years old on the high school level. So I think when he says that, he feels it happening as sort of a real thing in his life.
I'll tell you something that's interesting, and from discussing it with Jason, and, you know, folks aren't a member of the premium board, you got to be just to get Jason's stuff. But, of course, the podcasts are free, and I can't remember if we talked about that on a couple of the player breakdowns. But you get a guy with 3 years left in the out of the portal that has 2 or 3 years left. He can't go anywhere, right? You get a high school player, and he doesn't play his first year, he's out, free. You get a portal guy that comes in with 3 years, 2 years to 3 years eligibility left, and he doesn't start right away, he's there. And now with the rules that they're trying to put in place that you can't leave without – valid reasons and all that, you know, that's the waiver deal just rehashed. I think that getting transfers with multiple years is the way to go, really. I mean, to Don's point, you got to have high school recruits. But if you get a high school guy that comes in and he doesn't play his freshman year, he's out the door. It's no different than a college team picking up a guy. So it's still a mess. It's always going to be a mess. To Ross's point, Max evolving, you have to. You're going to get left behind. And I think so far they've filled the gaps they needed with some good guys. I mean, Nate McCollum and Devontae Walker, they're probably going to start. And if they don't start, they're going to have a ton of snaps between them. And my favorite quote from Mac, and this is the last point before we go to break, on Willie Lampkin. He's undersized. He's 6 foot, 275, 285. He's nasty and mean. 47-0 as a high school wrestler, so you know he knows how to use his hands, which has been an issue on the lines at North Carolina. But he said he gonna make somebody in that room work really hard not to lose their job. And that's what they need to do. They need to have competition. Anyway, Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com, sponsors of this podcast. Great friends with Inside Carolina and great friends for you, the Inside Carolina Premium subscribers. Get your 10% off your order online or in person. If you're not a member of the Premium Message Board, you need to get there. Jason's film breakdowns on each transfer is coming starting tomorrow, starting with McCollum, as I mentioned, to Walker, to Lampkin. And you get so much more with Donnie Scoops. You get the Scoop podcast with Ross and Don on YouTube and on podcast feeds. But Don's written articles are great as well as Sherelle McMillan and all that stuff. Basketball recruiting is heating up again, so it's worth it. Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. National Guys Pay the Bills. It's On the Beat Live.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
All right, basketball talk. Seems like we've done this before on the Beat Live. Tommy Ashley, John Bowman with the two beat writers, Adam Smith and Ross Martin. Ross, Carolina goes to Virginia. Adam, you were there covering. Ross, did you go to Virginia?
No, let's go to Adam. He was there.
Yeah, let me start with Adam, then. Adam, you're in Virginia. What is it about that place that causes Carolina basketball players to lose their minds, at least at some portion of the game, notwithstanding Baycott getting hurt right out the gate?
Well, I think it also has something to do with the team that plays in that place and the coach that coaches that team. You know, that's a pretty wimpy answer on my part, but
it's true.
I mean, you know, what was it before they went up there? They had scored. They had had like three of their last four games had been in the 40s. And one of the games they had scored 52. I mean, you know, I don't know. But, I mean, here's my my Carolina Blue take on it is I think if Baycott doesn't get hurt, they win the game. But, you know, hey, there's no way to prove that or anything. But, yeah, 8 straight losses in Charlottesville. Haven't won there since February 2012. What were you doing in 2012, Ross? How old were you? About 21?
I was in Nashville.
God,
I was 26, 27. Yeah, Jesus, I mean, yeah, I mean, tough place to win. I mean, I've been there. I mean, the best teams go in there and lose. It's just a tough place to play. He has good teams. He knows how to coach them. And I agree, like, UNC was in there till the end. Like, yeah. You make that. I think Leaky Black had a corner three that might have put them up that he missed in the closing minutes.
They were down
1. Yeah. You know, some sloppy turnovers there late. But they were in it. They were leading the second half. They showed some resolve. They were down. They were up. They were down again. So, but now, yeah, they're down. You know, the two big men. They're down their best. I think Armando Baycott is the best player on this team, the most important player on this team, because they have no one else who can score down low. You put Justin McCoy in when Baycott was out, and it was like, golly, where is the scoring? And then Jalen Washington came in and played pretty well and was able to score and maneuver down low, which is good to see. But I think the most important player is Baycott, and then after that's RJ Davis. But losing Baycott was huge. And I'm assuming we'll get an update tomorrow from the press conference, which I will be at as Adam and the interns fly to Louisville with Jim Hawkins. But it was a great opportunity for a loss, for a win, and they lost it. But look, I think this team can still do a lot of things. I don't think you should be I don't think it's a huge, huge loss. I think Virginia was favored. You know, that's a good Virginia team and a tough place to play.
Adam. I think just to add to that thought is that, you know, Virginia makes you earn it. You know, like wherever you play them, they make you earn it. And especially in Charlottesville, you've got to earn it. And I thought Carolina played well for what they had, especially particularly well in some stretches. You know, they had I'm sure you guys saw, they had a stretch where they got 27 straight points from guys who weren't named Baycott, Nance, Love, or RJ Davis. That's kind of insane when you think about this team, but they make you earn it. And Carolina ultimately was not able to earn it. You know, those 13 turnovers in a low possession game are tough, and you can't win that way up there. But anyway, go ahead, John. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was going to ask Adam what the mood was like in the locker room, because after the Pittsburgh loss, I sensed a lot of frustration. Armando Baycott in particular gave that interview where he kind of, you know, was maybe a little bit exasperated. I think you asked him explicitly if he was upset or not, and he said he was. So, Adam, what was the mood like in the locker room after the Virginia loss? Did you sense that same frustration, or was it maybe a different emotion?
I think it was quiet. It was quiet. You know, obviously they're not going to be in there partying and throwing water all over each other. But it was quiet, and I felt like it was sort of, you know, I don't want to say shell-shocked, but it was sort of a jarring thing, you know, to see Armando in there. And his, I mean, tell you, his ankle was quite swollen, you know. the veteran, the great Steve Kirshner, who handles media relations and communications for men's basketball, actually said, Adam, Armando is not available, because I was headed over there to try to talk to him. So I changed gears and went to Pete Nance, who did talk. But it was not – I didn't get the frustration from Pitt. Pitt, it was palpable. And what Armando said after Pitt, he said it from where he was sitting to the entire room. And he wanted to make sure the people that were there got it recorded. And he actually asked later if we were going to use the word shitty, or if it would get, like, as he said, crossed out. He wanted that out there, that he thought it was a shitty performance.
That's a quote, folks.
Yeah. I mean, Armando is incredibly savvy. It's like when he said, go Wolfpack, the night that NC State beat Duke when Carolina beat Wake. I mean, he is. You know, he's a vet in every sense. You know, John asking about Pitt made me think, you know, one of the things I keep going back to that day is Pete Nance hurt his back that day and wasn't getting any sort of treatment. I'm not faulting Carolina or anyone, but I don't know if Pete Nance was in the condition that he is in now. I don't know if it tightened up on him a day or two later, because he wasn't getting treatment. He talked to us and he went in and got a shower. And, like, that day, Justin McCoy didn't even play at Pitt. And he was, like, getting worked on by athletic trainer Doug Halgerson, something about his toe. He didn't play. And he had him up on the training table looking at his toe. So, anyway, I didn't sense the frustration. But, I mean, you know, if you look ahead to – obviously, Louisville is not good at all. If you look ahead, though, I mean, think about going into an ACC game without your starting front court – and with Jalen Washington as your one big, and I do think Jalen Washington is good and is going to be very good, but then you're trying to fill in the gaps with Leaky Black, Puff Johnson, Justin McCoy, who has been terrible, and Dontre Spouse. Ed, I know Louisville is 2-15, but they've got some size. They have a lot of size.
Well, it's not Dontre Styles, because Hubert won't play him.
Yeah,
I haven't seen him, so I don't know if he's even in that. He's not even in that rotation anymore.
Yeah,
that Louisville game, you know, that's not a good, easy place to play either. And Louisville wasn't any good last year. And if my memory serves, that's when the riot almost broke out at Louisville last year, with people throwing stuff and technical fouls and all that kind of stuff.
With the overtime, yeah. They won in overtime.
And that was a brutally bad Louisville team then as well. I mean, North Carolina needs to get ready to roll. There's some discussion. We'll call it a discussion in the YouTube chat about Baycott's injury. We'll find out. Like Ross said, you get some sort of update tomorrow at the press conference. If low ankle sprain, he'll be back in a week. High ankle sprain, I mean, one of the Alabama football players or Georgia football players missed 9 games with a high ankle sprain. And that's 9 weeks in college football terms. So who knows? But he needs to get back there out on the floor. One thing, I kind of wanted to discuss here, talking about this team, and you mentioned Justin McCoy. And for the record, I think he was minus 16 in his minutes at Virginia. Ooh. Stats are brutal, man, especially when they're that bad. But Adam, Caleb Love played really well in the first half, got some assists, and then it felt like to me like he was like, it's my turn, boys. And he made some plays late. A lot of people are discussing Love, and I want to discuss him as well. I have said, and I'm on the record saying, that he's got so much good in him that Hubert Davis sees the good in everybody, and it makes sense about why Love's still out there. And he should be out there. Quite frankly, this team's not good enough for him to sit. But he sure makes it tough, Adam, when you watch him play.
Yeah, he shot 1 for 7 in the first half. I could be totally wrong about this, but I think that was the number. But he still had 5 first half assists, and you looked at the first half and you're like, man, he played pretty well. Like, and even though he missed 6 shots. I am just a guy that is always going to be somewhat of a Caleb Love apologist, even though I think he shoots too much. Like, some of us used to play a little bit way back in the day. I wouldn't want to play with Caleb Love because he pulls all the time. I'd rather him move the ball. But I just think that his belief and his confidence in himself is his greatest strength sometimes and his greatest weakness right now. He has been asked by us about this shooting slump that he's been in, and he's fully aware of it. And, he always says, I trust my work. That's one of the things I'm sure Ross has heard from him a million times. I trust my work. I trust my work. And he does. And that's why it was two impossible threes that he kind of hit late. One of them was, I don't even know how the thing went in from our vantage point where we were. But, you almost feel like when Carolina's at full strength, when Armando's in there, when Pete's available, it would be better for Caleb just to cut his shots in half. And get Armando more touches and other guys more touches. I feel like RJ Davis picks his spots pretty well. Sometimes you don't. Another thing with Caleb is, let me tell you, if a possession goes nowhere and there's 7 seconds on the shot clock, they give it to Caleb Love. And there was a possession in the first half where he got stuck with the ball. I wrote it down. He got the ball with 6 seconds left with Reese Beekman on him. I mean, he was screwed. He couldn't do anything. And he ended up chucking up a step back three that didn't have a chance. I don't even know if I answered your question other than just running my mouth, Tommy.
No, I think Love is really, really good when he's on, but in the first half he wasn't on, and I felt like he was still good because he had the 5 assists. It's maddening, and it's also pretty awesome to watch if you're a Carolina fan. I mean, folks want to hate when he's playing bad, but folks want to get that big picture on the wall.
I mean,
of him making the shot in the Final Four. So same guy. Go ahead, John.
I was going to bring up this comment from Tom. It was kind of going towards the point I was making as well, because sometimes he throws up the shots that look like they don't have a chance of making them, and they go in. So would you go this far? This is a question from Tom Bollins. He asks, Love should be out there, but his defense and shooting is not good. How about not starting for a while and him being the sixth man? Ross, would you?
I mean, it's unrealistic. It's unrealistic. It would never happen. Like, they would never. I mean, he's not going to come off the bench. It's kind of like a non-starter.
Yeah, and his defense, if you look at his defense, was it the last 8 minutes of the Wake Forest game? Is that when he really
trembled a lot at the end? But he played Appleby at the start.
Yeah, I mean, Love is purely an engagement guy. And when he's fully engaged, he can be fantastic. But, part of it's on the coaching too, right? if he's been the same way for 3 years, at some point, He's got to be coached to be different. But yeah, he's too important for this team. And you live with the good, and you don't live with, I mean, you live with the bad. Go ahead, Ross. Sorry.
Yeah. Who would you start over, like start in his place? Like DeMarco Dunn? I mean, Seth Trimble.
Who are you going
to
start?
Seth Trimble doesn't provide much offense. I mean, Seth Trimble's almost a liability to have out there because he can't shoot from the perimeter. So you have Seth Trimble and Leaky Black out there. You have two players that are not confident shooting from the perimeter. Leaky Black has been better this season, but I still think he lacks the confidence. Whereas I think RJ Davis and Caleb Love, you know, they can hit threes. I mean, Caleb can miss, you know, going 1 for 7, whatever he went for. You know, he only made a three in the first half, and then he hit three kind of late. I might be right, but I know he hit at least two late. You know, he can have those stretches where he can knock down threes. So, you know, he is a perimeter threat they need, because I think this is my next point. I mean, you're seeing how much they miss Brady. They're missing that spot-up catch-and-shoot shooter. They don't have it this year. You know, if Brady was in there and caught that pass that Leaky shot up, you know, they would have been back in that Virginia game and essentially won it. They're missing a shooter because it's not Leaky. It's not Trimble. It's not Puff. You know, and then Caleb and RJ, your ball handlers, they're not really like the wings. So I think they're – I knew this would be an issue. They're missing a catch-and-shoot spot-up wing. Because it's definitely not Nance either. I mean, Nance has knocked down some threes, but he's definitely not that type of player. You would think that Puff, you know, the hope was that Puff could become that guy, but I don't think he has that perimeter shooting like his brother does. So, and now Nance is out too. And so that's going to be the difference for this team. People have asked me, like, what's the issue? I just think they're really missing a shooter, and you've got to recruit shooters. You've got to recruit guys and just knock it down. We don't have that on this team right now.
And we've said it since they were number one that – you know, I think a catch and shoot shooter, you know, we were even talking about could Tyler Nickel play 8 minutes and be a catch and shoot guy, but we've been saying it since November, I think. When everything was all sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah, the problem is also the shooting's bad, but then the defense just goes off the rails. Adam, your point, you know, Virginia makes it so hard, but Carolina, it took so much for Carolina to build that lead. So much to build it. They work so hard to build it, and then they just give it away.
Yeah.
It's like, I have worked all my life for all my money. Let me give it to this African prince that sends me an email, and I'm going to give it all away. I mean, that's what it seems like watching this team when they play defense. And in the drive, I think it was Beekman at the end.
Yeah, the dunk.
That just had a dunk that just basically sealed the game. And it was just like, what are they doing?
How is Ben Vanderplas wide open? You know, like they lost Vanderplas several times. Like, how can you lose him?
He scored more points against Carolina than he'd scored in the previous four games combined. It's not because he's great. I mean, he's pretty good. He's solid. I mean,
if he's wide open, he can make the shot. I mean, he's good. Yeah. He's a decent enough player.
Maybe he would have helped Carolina. Maybe he could have been that spot-up guy. Anything left on the basketball end? We're about 10 minutes to 10. We usually run about an hour.
This question from Turner Whitfield is just a launching off point to talk about Jalen Washington. Turner asks, any chance Washington becomes a one and done? But more broadly, how do you think Washington played against Virginia? Can he step into a bigger role if Nance and Baycott are out for a significant amount of time?
Adam, you go ahead. I don't think he will. Can he? He's going to have to.
Yeah, he has to. I mean, he has to. There's no other choice. I mean, you know, we all know how long of a road he had back from the ACL injuries and the surgeries and stuff. Thank God he's gotten back. I mean, what Ross and I were talking today, he had played 6 or 7 games before UVA and scored 13 points on the season. And then he had 13 the other night. And I think something to remember about UVA is how hard they defend you down there. You know what I mean? Like, they bang, you know, Shedrick and the big Brazilian guy. What's his name, John? I don't know. He might not even be Brazilian. Francisco, somebody, 7'1". They beat the crap out of you down there. And, you know, Jalen Washington's not Armando Baycott. He's a little more finesse. And I thought he held up well. Pete told us. He told Inside Carolina when we talked to him that he thought that Jalen, you know, comported himself well in terms of dealing with the physical nature of the game. I don't think he's going to be a one and done, but
yeah, I'll hop in here. I don't think he's one and done. I'm not sure he's an NBA player. People are really high on him. We haven't seen it yet. I think he's good. I think he can be a really good college player, but a 4-year player, but he doesn't have that athleticism, man. I mean, I don't think he – I think Baycott's more athletic than him. He does have a good touch. He had some nice little moves around the basket. But as of right now, I mean, he could get a lot better. But I just don't think he has the athleticism that the NBA seeks. But he's going to have to step up. If Baycott can't go, he's kind of all they got down there. So we just need to see how he does and if he thrives with 25, 30 minutes a game now. And they're going to have to get creative with McCoy and Johnson and maybe some nickel in there and Leaky Black playing the five, maybe some maybe we'll see Dontrez too if Baycott and Nance can't go. It doesn't seem like Nance is going to be ready for a while. If you read Adam Smith's story, it doesn't seem like he is close to coming back. Must be pretty serious lower back thing, but and we'll know more about Baycott tomorrow. But, yeah, I don't think Jalen Washington's one and done.
One point I wanted to make.
The thing I would say about Jalen Washington, I'd be interested to see what he looks like after a full offseason in the strength mm-hmm. program mm-hmm. where he's not having to work on rehabbing his knee. You know what I mean? Like, he sure does have a nice shooting form, and he gets it off high. I mean, you can tell in some of those Jim Hawkins photos, that nice high release that we've run. You know, I think it'd be interesting to see what he become. I always laugh when I hear the word NBA scouts, and Ross and I are guilty of it. We'll tweet it out that NBA scouts are at the game, NFL scouts are at the game. Some of these NBA scouts are guys that got fired from college coaching jobs that just live in the area. I can tell you one was very close to me who used to coach for Mark Gottfried at NC State. And he was talking about before the game that he thought Jalen Washington was the best prospect on Carolina's team.
That's where I was about to go.
Okay. So I don't think he's wrong. He knows more basketball than we do. I don't think he's going to be in the 2023 NBA draft, but it'll be just like with all these guys, be interesting to see what they can become. I think he's got a very high upside, and I think he's just sort of scratching the surface of getting back into playing competitive basketball.
Yeah, he's long, he can run, he can shoot, and people get paid in the league to do that. You know, if Brady Manek was 7 foot tall like Jalen Washington, he'd be playing in the league right now. But for whatever reason, Brady Manek is 6'8", maybe 6'9", and a little bit slow, and he's living the life in Australia or wherever he is now. So I'll push back on you there, Ross. I think Jalen Washington is the pro prospect on this team.
Can he shoot?
No, I think he can shoot.
He's got a nice soft touch. Yeah, he hasn't hit a three yet. I think he's like
over. He hasn't hit a shot outside 10 feet.
It's pretty, though. So he's got that going for him. John B., what you got before we get out of here?
I was going to say, too, we've talked a lot on this show about bench minutes and how Hubert doesn't play the bench very much. And I think we kind of saw the impact a little bit of that against Virginia. Washington had a great first half. And in the second half, he kind of faded a little bit. Even some of his shots were coming up short late. So when we talk about on this show, play the bench more, it pays off in games like this when you need to use someone like Jalen Washington for an extended run. So I do think it'll be interesting to see how he plays after he's gotten this kind of extended game, gotten the opportunity to kind of fill his lungs with a full game of college basketball, and then see how that sort of impacts his stamina and his performance moving forward.
John, with the flowy language, fill his lungs with the full college experience. It sounds like some Bob Dylan song. Look, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to get out of here. To the bench point, I mean, he couldn't play Jalen Washington before now. So to that point, I mean, he just hadn't been healthy enough to play. I'm going to throw up a fun question, since everybody likes fun questions. Can each of you tell us who your favorite professional wrestler is before you conclude? I grew up going to see wrestling at Dorton Arena for like $5 a ticket, all the greats. And some of the YouTubes and stuff out there is awesome. So I'm going to say Ric Flair, just because kind of knew him a little bit and hung out with him. Adam Smith, who's your favorite wrestler?
I've never been to a professional wrestling event like you have, Tommy. I'll say the Ultimate Warrior. Love that face paint.
What you got, Ross? Know anybody?
I did not watch any wrestling growing up. I'll say Rulon Gardner. The real wrestler. I mean, I would say Ric Flair because of the Carolina connections. You know, he was shout out the Tar Heels and Chapel Hill.
Saw him plastered at the Carolina South Carolina game in Kenan Stadium, I guess 2008. And everybody, of course, everybody's yelling at him to do the woo deal. What you got, John? Do you know what wrestling is? Do you know what professional wrestling is?
I am not a big wrestling guy. You know, look at me and you might be surprised to find out that I'm not a big wrestler. I mean, I know what the WWE is. Wasn't there like a UNC football player who became a UFC fighter, like Travis Bond or something like that? Is anybody in the chat
know what I'm
talking
though.
About?
Yeah.
There was a lineman who became a not UFC but a pro wrestler. I think it might be Travis Bond.
And then
that's
Mark...
my favorite. I can't think of anyone. Brennan Williams.
Brennan Williams. That's what it is. Yeah.
Not in chat. Brennan Williams. That was the name I was thinking of.
Yeah. So it was a. It was an interesting time back there in the day in Dorton Arena. Shout out to that beautiful arena there at the State Fairgrounds. Anything left, boys, before we get out of here? It's been On the Beat Live on Thursday, January 12th. So almost 10 o'clock.
Do you need my stat, Tommy?
Yeah, two nickels.
I got a stat, too, after you, Adam.
Okay, well, I just looked it up when we did the wrestling thing. I had seen it earlier. Okay, so there are – well, KenPom recognizes some – NCAA.com doesn't recognize as many as KenPom does. I think some teams are in transition. But KenPom recognizes 363 teams on the Division I level this season. Louisville, Carolina's next opponent on Saturday afternoon in the KFC Yum Center, ranks 355, so 8 from the bottom in turnover percentage. 24% of their possessions on offense – end in turnovers. It's actually 23.9%, but I rounded up. That's a lot. I mean, you think Caleb Love and RJ Davis have a lot of turnovers on the season? Go look at L. Ellis of Louisville. I was looking today. Dude's got 75 turnovers on the season. He actually has 80 assists and 75 turnovers, so he has a positive assist to turnover. Literally everyone else on Louisville's team, if you go down the entire thing, has more turnovers than assists. It's not good. So you would hope the Tar Heels, you know, Baycott and Nance are hurt, but their guards and wing guys aren't hurt. You know, if you could exploit that a little bit, get some live ball turnovers, some pick sixes, as Hubert Davis calls them, that could be helpful. But Louisville is one of the worst in college basketball at turning the ball over.
What you got, John B?
I wanted to give a shout-out to RJ Davis because in the beginning of the year, the narrative was a little bit that Caleb was having a rough shooting year, but RJ was as well. But in conference play, RJ Davis, 83% on free throws, 59% on twos, and 43% on three-pointers. That's very good. RJ has kind of gotten right back into a hot shooting streak in conference play. So that's my stat of the night.
It's a good one. Good way to end. Positivity pod. It's been On the Beat. Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Somebody asked, I am streaming the Inside Carolina Live show from CHL Studios from 10 to 12. We're doing it live, doing it the same way I did the signing day show at the Don's Man Tower. So if it's screwed up, it's all on me. But it will be live on YouTube as well as streaming at chapelboro.com. Ross Martin, Adam Smith, John Bowman, I'm Tommy Ashley. Inside Carolina, peace.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.